Jordan into the promised land, God said, put stones there. And why put stone? Why a pile of rocks? What's special about a pile of rocks? Well, because it stands out, it's different. It's like, and it's, you know, when you're out in the woods, when someone has piled rocks someplace. And God knew that children, because children are children, as adults, sometimes we'll just walk right on by, go, oh, a pile of rocks, that's cool, and just keep walking. But children would go, why are the rocks there? Who put the rocks there? How long have the rocks been there? And go on and ask a million questions about a pile of rocks. And that's good, because God wanted their fathers to say, why are those rocks there? Because let me tell you a story. A long time ago, we didn't live here. We were slaves in Egypt. And God miraculously redeemed us from Egypt, and he miraculously parted the waters of the Red Sea, parted the waters of the Jordan, so that we could cross over to this land that he promised us. It was to be a memorial, to a testimony to the Lord. That's how, in my life, the Facebook memory section has become to me. It was, as you know, I was temporarily for about 18 months, Rainey and Tanner and I lived with my mom in Arizona. I was between ministries. We were searching for ministry. At some point, was thinking, okay, God, maybe you won't call me back into ministry. Where are you going to lead me? And at the time, I was serving, we were attending my mom's church, Verde Baptist Church, and started attending the Wednesday night Bible study. The pastor had a Wednesday night study. We attended and we started participating. And the pastor's schedule became very obvious that he needed to remove some things from his life. But that Bible study was important to the life of the church. And so I had been involved, Rainey and I had been attending and participating. And Rob said, hey, Dan, would you be willing to take over the Wednesday night study? Explained his situation. I said, that'd be awesome. Oh, that'd be great. And I approached the Wednesday night study excited to share. We were going through the Luke's gospel at the time, and I was excited to share with what God was doing and what Luke had recorded, and to have the opportunity to invest his word into people's lives. And then during that time, a church where some good friends of ours were attending lost their pastor. He was called to another ministry, and they needed someone to come to fill in while they searched for a pastor. And so they asked me to be the interim. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Was out of ministry, just participating in the local church and doing what I could to serve. And then I got an opportunity to teach again and to teach this small Wednesday night group. And now I've got this opportunity to preach and to really care for this congregation who's hurting because their pastor has left. They're not sure where the Lord's going to lead because who's God going to bring in. And so I got the opportunity to care for this group of people. And over the course of the last number of months, those memories have been coming back. I'll post things that we were going through in the sermons on Sunday mornings. I posted things from what we were going through on Wednesday nights at Verde. And I've not known them hardly at all. I knew them for a matter of weeks, literally. But I have some friends who are here. Some more folks that I knew from Verde Baptist are here. Wayne and Gail Feeler are over here. There were sowers, and they got some friends with the Sowers Ministry, and they're here, and they were such an encouraging part of that Wednesday night study at the time when they were serving at Rainbow Acres there in Camp Verde. It's great. It is encouraging, and sometimes these moments I get a little overcome with emotion because of what God was doing. And as I look back in the memories, I'm reminded, I see your faces, and I'm reminded through my memories on Facebook what was going on a year ago, 2 years ago at this point. And you know what I realized? God had me on those Wednesday nights, and I was responsible and accountable for how I led and how I taught and how I involved myself in the lives of those people at Verde. I was also accountable for the preaching that I did on Sunday mornings at the river and for how I invested myself there and cared for them during their time of transition. But you know what I realized? Nobody got more out of that experience than I did. God had me there to serve. And I'm thinking, so that I can care for these people, God had me there more for me than he did for them. And if the people at the river and the people at Verde got a quarter out of the experience, what I got out of it, it was a blessing beyond belief. Because I look back and went, man, God didn't have me there for them. God had them there for me to learn, for me to grow. And as we come to Mark chapter 6 again this morning, and we're going to read a portion of our text. We're going to be in Mark 6, verses 30 through 56. We're going to read a portion, verses 35 to 40. Go ahead and stand as we get ready to read together. And it's a very familiar story. It's a story about the feeding of the 5,000. And as I studied it, you know what I realized? That miracle, though it had an influence and there was accountability for how the people responded to the feeding of the 5,000, all you have to do is read John chapter 6. The miracle was not for the hungry people. The miracle was for the preparation of the disciples. And we'll see that as we go through the text. But let's read this together. Mark 6, verses 35 to 44. When it was already quite late, his disciples came to him and said, "This place is desolate and is already quite late. Send them away so that they may go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered them, "You give them something to eat." And they said to him, "Shall we go and spend 200 denarii and bread and give them something to eat?" And he said to them, "How many loaves do you have? Go look." And when they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. And he commanded them all to sit down by groups on the green grass. They sat in groups of hundreds and of fifties. And he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up toward heaven, he blessed the food and broke the loaves and kept giving them to the disciples to set before them. And he divided up the 2 fish among them all, and they all ate and were satisfied, and they picked up 12 full baskets of the broken pieces and also of the fish. Jesus, it's a very common story. It's a story of your greatness. It's a revelation of who you are, God, and your ability to provide. But Jesus, I pray that we would see what you intended for the disciples to know. What was the point? Jesus, you didn't randomly do miracles just for the sake of convenience. You didn't randomly do miracles to put on a show. Jesus, you were training the 12. You were training your disciples for what they were going to need as they walked and lived and ministered with you after your crucifixion and your resurrection. Jesus, I pray that we would learn, that we would hear, that we would understand, God. In your name we pray, amen. You may have a seat. So it's so simple. It's a simple story. We see provision. We see a group of people on a hillside. We know that Jesus has been teaching. Now, mind you, just a little freebie here. Mark makes no mention of what Jesus was teaching. Obviously, Jesus was teaching. It was important. But for the point of what Jesus was doing, Mark didn't feel the need to clue us into that because that's not what was primary. Jesus was teaching. There was a very large group of people. In the text, it will say there was 5,000 men. Men didn't go any. It was just not men. There were families there. There were people there. There were children there besides the men. This is a huge crowd. Huge crowd. I mean, we know it had to have been more than just men because how many men could have got there without a wife to give them directions on how to go? Amen. Exactly. Thanks, Aretha. There was more than 5,000 people there. This is a huge, huge group. We see the food. We see provision. We see Jesus meeting our basic needs. It's the most common lesson that I've heard from this is if Jesus can provide food for thousands of people, untold thousands of people, from just a couple pieces of bread and a couple of small fish, what can he do for you? Don't worry about your job. Don't worry. You just trust Jesus. That's true. But no, that is not the point. It's not the point at all. If you haven't done so already, please do take your Bibles and turn to Mark chapter 6. As we go through this, I ask the question, is this deja vu all over again? Is this scenario deja vu? Is this scenario reminiscent of something from the past? Let's see if you can pick it up as we kind of walk through the story to see the context, to see a little bit more about what Jesus was intending for his disciples and us in this day as disciples of Jesus, what we are to learn. The first thing that we see, very first thing we see is we see a thrilling victory. Look at chapter 6, verse 30. The apostles gathered together with Jesus, and they reported to him all they had done and taught. Don't forget, Jesus had just sent out the disciples two by two. Two by two. And by the way, this is a little freebie, a little trivia thing here. This is the first mention of the disciples being called apostles. Apostles were sent ones. Jesus had sent them out on their own. He had given them authority. He had given them direction, empowered them to minister as he ministered on their behalf. This is where the word apostle means sent one. They have a calling and a commission to go from Jesus, to be sent out. They are the sent ones. And Jesus, he sent them out, as we recall from last week, he sent them out after Jesus had gone back to his hometown and had basically been belittled. Because he didn't have a pedigree. He had not sat at the feet of a proper scholar, a proper rabbi. We saw that that Jesus in his ministry had attracted a lot of attention, even attention of Herod, who thought John the Baptist, who he had beheaded, had come back to life. It's a reminder, the first part that we talked about last week, is a reminder of the difficulties and the traps of following Jesus that we can fall into. Well, these disciples, they went out, and we don't know how long they were gone, but they came back, and they reported to him what they had done and what they had taught. They had accomplished what Jesus had sent them to do. Now, I don't know about you, but me, I really, really like to talk, and I really like to tell, hey, this is what's going on. Come back from a missions trip, come back from vacation, come back from going down to Soldotna Creek Park and flipping for reds. I want to come home and go, Rainy, look at what we did. We caught these fish, and I broke this fish off, and I hooked this many fish, and oh, it was so great. Look, I stink and smell like fish, and I dropped it all over the carpet. It's awesome. Look, this is great. And she's just like, you're a disaster. Because I want to come back. I'm excited about what we did. Kids, when we'd take kids to high school and junior high camp, they would come back so excited about what God had done in their life. The disciples came back. Jesus, look what we did. He had empowered them, and they couldn't wait to report back to him that it worked, that they were successful, and they had taught. Jesus had been doing all the teaching up to this point. They went out on their own, and they spoke of the kingdom of God. Never forget the first time that I got to teach. I was 20 years old. I got to teach our junior high ministry at Scottsdale Bible Church. And, boy, that was a big to-do. I had a 20-minute lesson to teach to 50 junior hires. There could not have been a more important assignment in the history of the world. Scottsdale Bible Church was a mucky muck church. It was a very big church. It was an important church, and I had been asked to teach the junior hires. What a disaster it was, but that's a whole different thing. It wasn't the best sermon in the world, definitely. But I couldn't wait when the junior high director got back into town to sit down and go, this is what I did. This is what I taught. This is how they responded. This is how I completely shut my brain down and didn't know what I was doing and probably slobbered on myself when the senior pastor walked in the middle of it and sat down to listen to what this new guy was teaching. Completely discombobulated me, but I couldn't wait to share. Because we like to talk about our experiences. It was a huge victory. The disciples came back. Jesus, we've done this. We've taught this. But they were exhausted. And there was an anticipation of rest. Look back at the text, verse 31. And he said to them, come away by yourselves to a secluded place and rest for a while. For there were many people coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. And then they went away in the boat to a secluded place by themselves. They came back. They were exhausted. Ministry is exhausting. Teaching is exhausting. Caring for people's needs is exhausting. And it says that people were coming and going, coming and going. A constant stream of people needing Jesus' attention, needing their attention. You know what it's like. You've been at work where you can't, it seems like you can't get anything done because people constantly need you. Mothers at home, it doesn't take more than one child for you to feel like you constantly are needed. The stereotypical, and it's stereotypical because it's true, you can't even sit down and go to the bathroom without little fingers under the door. Hi, Mom. Hi, Mom. 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 Mama. 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 Mom. Hi. That's the life of a child. That's the life of a mother. Constant coming and going. Constant coming and going. They were exhausted. And Jesus said, let's go away and let's rest. We've had this huge victory. We're tired. Let's take it easy. And they did. They did have a time of rest. They had a time of rest on a boat, traveling across to the other side. And then they found themselves, as Jesus promised, they found themselves in a desolate place. Interesting, Mark mentions three times the desolate place that they were going to. He says in verse 31, Jesus said, come to a secluded place. Verse 32, they went away in a boat to a secluded place, emphasizing by themselves. Then in verse 35, and said, this place is desolate. They went away to a place in the middle of nowhere. They went with the intention of rest. But what did they find there? They found a hungry crowd. Look back at the text again. It was already quite late. verse 34, Jesus went ashore. Crowd, he felt compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. And when it was already quite late, his disciples came to him and said, this place is desolate. It's late. Send them away so they may go into the surrounding villages and buy themselves something to eat. It's a hungry crowd. And notice, they weren't just hungry for food. Says they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. He felt compassion for them. They didn't know how hungry they were in a spiritual sense, but they came, they listened to Jesus teach. Jesus saw they were sheep without a shepherd. They were hungry for leadership. They were hungry to be cared for. But then they were also, it was hungry, they were hungry. It was getting late. They'd been out away in the middle of nowhere for a long time, for quite some time. And the disciples said, send them away. Send them away and buy themselves something to eat. It's obvious that things were starting to get to that point where people were getting hangry. You know what hangry is, right? I won't mention anything about which people get more hangry than anybody else. But you know people, when they're hungry, they start to get just a little bit testy. They get just a little bit of an edge of an attitude about them. They get unsettled. And they really get short when you're trying to be funny with them. Or you're trying to accomplish something with them. You know what it's like when you get hungry. You just get that claustrophobic feeling. And yet there's probably a ripple was kind of going through the crowd. Okay, dude, been teaching long, we're hungry. The disciples sensed it. Crowd of people that needs food. And they were faced with an impossible situation. Jesus said, verse 37, you give them something to eat. And they answered him and said, shall we go and spend 200 denarii on bread and give them something to eat? A denarii was a day's wages. A day's wages. Shall we take 200 days' wages to go buy this crowd food? It was a statement of you're nuts. You're nuts. Shall we go cash in more than we have to spend? Should we empty everything we have to provide a meal here? We cannot do it. That's what they were saying. You notice as you read the New Testament, we read the Gospels with a view to passive aggressive, okay? The disciples were always passive aggressive with Jesus. Instead of going, Jesus, we can't do this. How are we going to do this? We don't have enough money. There's not enough food here. We can't make any of it grow on trees, nor money nor food right now on an instant. But instead they give him this they give him this passive aggressive. And he said to them, "How many loaves do you have? Go look." And when they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. And he commanded them all to sit down by groups on the green grass. And they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Okay. Impossible situation. And it's looking more impossible and dire all the time. They gather their supplies. And they would have searched. They would have been calling through the crowd. Hey, anybody got any food? Anybody got any food? And all they could come up with. 5 loaves, 2 fish. I think there's a Sunday school song or four about that. 5 loaves, 2 fish. And so there's that point. Okay, I'm sorry. I would be going, see, really? You want us to do it? Do you see what we came up with? We told you so. We told you it wouldn't work. And then Jesus had the audacity to go get them into groups, sit them on the lawn, groups of 50, groups of 100, which, by the way, there's another clue. There's another clue of the deja vu. When he had them sit into groups, you know what he was saying? He was organizing them, and the word that was used there was garden plots. He was basically saying, put them into garden plots of 50 and 100. It would be like somebody who actually knows what they're doing when planting stuff that they want to grow and they want to eat, unlike myself, who knows none of that. It's organized. It's laid out. You can walk between the rows, and you've got, I know, this thingy over here you want to grow, and this thingy over here you want to grow, and this thingy over here, and there's rows so you can walk through and you can tend to it. Huge on this hillside. The way Mark described it, that's what how Jesus had it laid out. Group of 50, group of 100, and they were orderly, and they were organized, set up with the idea and the anticipation, we're getting ready to feed you. It's like, get yourselves around the table, sit down, and we'll bring the food. It's really looking hopeless now. If I'm the disciples, I'm thinking, this is really awkward with a capital A, capital W, capital K, W, capital W, capital A, capital R, capital D. Awkward. It's the worst. We don't have enough food. We're gonna walk around. We're going to look silly. These people are going to riot on us because we're promising them food and there's nothing. It's an impossible situation. And I'm sure that they would have been fearful of what it was going to. It's an astonishing outcome. To them, how many loaves do you have? Go look. They found out 5 and 2 fish. He commanded them to sit in the grass. Sit down. The 5 loaves and the 2 fish. Looking up toward heaven, he blessed the food, broke the loaves, and he kept giving to them to the disciples to set before them. And he divided up the 2 fish among them all. And they all ate and were satisfied. Another clue to deja vu. They all ate and they were all satisfied. It was an astonishing outcome. And they picked up 12 full baskets of the broken pieces and also of the fish. Okay, 12. How many disciples were there? 12. What did the disciples not have time to do because of all the people coming and going that we saw earlier in the verse? Didn't even have time to eat. They were probably as hangry as the rest of the crowd. Jesus, dismiss them. Send them on. They've been here long enough. Let's wrap things up so we can go get something to eat. Jesus not only fed the crowd, he fed them. But then we see that after this astonishing outcome, they still had hardened, slow-believing hearts. Look back at 45. It says, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him on the other side of Bethsaida, while he himself was sending the crowd away. And after bidding them farewell, he left for the mountains to pray. Notice, he sent them out alone. You go ahead. Jesus sent them off in a boat, in a lake, this time by themselves. Do you remember what happened the last time that Jesus sent them? Well, not the last time, they sailed over there right now, but a most recent time, the time before that, remember what happened that Jesus sent them out on a boat? A really big storm. What happened the previous time, just now, when Jesus sent them to a boat? They were met with an impossible situation that in their exhaustion, Jesus expected them to meet. I don't know if the disciples are thinking, but the little foreshadowing in my brain that I see this is going to go, this is not going to turn out well in their minds. Jesus has got something going on. Go on a boat, huge storm. Get through the storm, see Jesus, demon-possessed man on the other side who's a terror. Then get in a boat. Let's go get some rest. They get to the boat. So many people around, they can't even get something to eat. They have to minister to the crowd of 5,000 with no food, or actually way more than 5,000. Jesus wants them to do something with nothing. They're exhausted. They're hangry. And then he sends them off in a boat again. They're hoping, beyond hope, I'm sure, that this is finally, they're going to be able to get some rest. But reality's got to set in. They're thinking, okay, what's Jesus doing now? And what did they say? When it was evening, the boat, verse 7, was in the middle of the sea, and he was alone on the land. Seeing them straining at the oars, for the wind was against them, at about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. But when they saw him walking on the sea, they supposed it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were terrified. I mean, yeah, you're in a boat, it's stormy, you're working so hard, these are big, strong, powerful men, and they're straining at the oars. The oars aren't straining, their muscles are straining to the point of they can't strain any longer, and it's like they're not making any headway at all. And then here comes this figure that looks like Jesus, just chilling, walking across the waves, as if nothing is going on. Yes, they're terrified, they see that, and they can't put two and two together and come up with four. So they're terrified, and they cried out. But immediately he spoke with them and said to them, take courage, it is I, do not be afraid. They went into the boat with them, and the wind stopped. He said, Mark recorded something that is just kind of takes you back like a boomerang. For they had not gained any insight from the last time there was a storm on the lake. No. They had not gained any insight from the incident of the loaves, but their heart was hardened. Feeding the 5,000, I'm feeding of thousands, with a couple of pieces of bread and a couple of fish. Feeling like they're going to die out on the lake. How do the two connect? How is it that it wasn't their heart was hardened because they didn't realize Jesus could deal with a storm? How was their heart hardened that they didn't get what Jesus was doing with the loaves? And that's the indication that the story about the miracle of the loaves was for the disciples and preparing them. See, here's the main thing. Jesus wanted them to learn to walk with him. To walk with Jesus. The main thing is walking with Jesus. And just so you know, we're going to wrap this, tie this all together. Did you, anybody guess what the deja vu moment was about? Israel in the wilderness. Israel in the wilderness. They had a thrilling victory. They had gone through, they'd been redeemed from Egypt. They'd gone through the parted sea. Yes! Egyptians are drowned. They're done. Jesus has taken us to the promised land, flowing with milk and honey. All these promises about what a great life it's going to be. And then what did they face in the wilderness? Oh, by the way, wilderness equals desolate place. They found that they ran out of water. They ran out of food. And what did they do? They grumbled. That was like the ultimate hangry right there. They just grumbling, God, Moses brought us out here to die. Remember they're saying, we wish we could go back to Egypt. And what did God do? God provided manna, and how many of them ate and were satisfied? All of them. All of them. Every single one. It was an astonishing outcome from this impossible situation. But then what came about of them wandering in the wilderness? Their hearts were hardened, and suddenly, okay, hey, Mr. Food Factory, okay, the manna that we're eating, that's not really meeting our needs right now. Can you give us something else? And they grumbled. They grumbled every time they thought they were going to fall short of water. Every time they thought they got bored with the food, they would grumble. Their heart was hardened. You see, they saw God. The disciples saw Jesus. Is we go to him when we need something, and then we go on our way. That's what the people did. That's what the disciples did. Walking with Jesus is this. Walking with Jesus is over our heads. Walking with Jesus is beyond our ability to perform. See, that's what Jesus was trying to teach the disciples. He kept giving them impossible situations. They're in a boat. They're going to perish. They're doing everything they can. These seasoned sailors. They come to the Gerasene demoniac. No one can control this guy. He breaks through the chains. He's in the tombs by himself. Jesus healed the woman with the 12-year issue of blood. Nobody could do anything except make her worse. Nobody could do anything except allow Jairus' daughter to die. They had gone out and ministered, and they needed rest, and they were hungry, and they didn't even have a chance for it. And then they had all these people, and they had no opportunity to feed them. And now they're out on a lake, all by themselves. The first time in the lake where there's a storm, Jesus is asleep at the wheel. He's on a boat. He's laying down on the boat cushion. He's asleep. He's snoring. Actually, I doubt Jesus snored because his nasal passages would have been perfection. No snoring, but he was out cold. Jesus, don't you care? Now they're in the boat, and Jesus is walking by. And it's interesting, because what does it say? He intended, verse 48, he intended to pass by them. He saw them straining, and he was just going to walk right on by. Jesus, you're asleep, don't you care? And now my thought would be, dude, you're ignoring us. You've totally abandoned us. At least you're the boat before. Now you've abandoned us. You're ignoring us. Jesus wanted them to not see him just as a solution for their problems. Because walking with Jesus requires more than we have to give. Jesus wanted them to understand what it meant to actually have a relationship with him. I see this in my prayers. I hear this in our prayers. I hear this in our prayer requests. Is that we look at Jesus as a spiritual ATM. Hey, Jesus, I'm here for my withdrawal, okay? Oh, yeah, that's right, I got to put money in. Never forget one time, Tatum and I going through the drive-thru. And she goes up to the ATM, bank's closed, she puts her card in, types in her code, asks for $20. And it said, and it wouldn't give her the money. And it kept kicking her card back. And she's like, why won't it give me money? Why won't it give me money? She's okay, I'm sorry. She's perfectly stable as an emotional 18-year-old. I wonder why there's no money coming out of the machine. Oh, no, she was very upset, like almost literally banging on the machine, really upset. And then she read the slip that came out, and she's like, ha, I don't have any money in my account. I got to put money in before I can get money out. We look at Jesus, we look at God, the same way the Israelites and the disciples did. They're spiritual dispensaries. We go, we put in our card, we type in our ATM number, we say the neat little prayer, and Jesus, will you please do this for me? Jesus, will you give me this? Jesus, will you provide this for me? They didn't understand that God was calling them to walk in a continual relationship, not just a going to the ATM relationship. Walking with Jesus will be inconvenient. Walking with Jesus will challenge our agendas. The disciples were tired. Jesus had promised them rest. He said, let's go get some rest. The rest for him, for them, do you notice the boat trip over to the crowd to feed the 5,000? No issues. Jesus gave them the amount of time it would take for them to get across the ocean to rest. They thought they were going to get more. They were inconvenienced. Their agenda was challenged. Look at Proverbs 16:9, and actually for the sake of time, because we are starting to run short, let me just read it to you. Proverbs 16:9, it's a very familiar verse. We all know it. I guess I should go on the other side of Psalms and not be heading towards Genesis if I'm going to find Proverbs. Proverbs 16:9, this is what most likely Solomon wrote. He said, the mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. We probably all heard that verse. We make our plans, God directs our steps. And we think of that in terms of, what's God's will? What's God's will for me? Should I have this job or should I have this job? Oh, look, I made my plans for here, but he's directed me here. Neat. Awesome. Thank you, Jesus. There's my answer. Sure, that's true. No. What steps is God ordering in our life? The sovereign Lord of creation, the sovereign King, who the story of the Bible is the story of redemption, the story of establishing his kingdom. What are the steps in our lives that he's ordering? What were the steps of the lives, no matter what the plans of the disciples were? What were the steps that he was ordering? The accomplishing of his kingdom. The purposes of the kingdom. God doesn't just redirect us so we can have this job instead of this job. We are so short-sighted. No, I'm so short-sighted sometimes that I look at life entirely in terms of right now and what's convenient and what's comfortable. Let me tell you, we better get this one down, and we better get it down now, because I guarantee you, okay, I don't know. I can't guarantee because I don't know what's going to happen. Chances are that we're not going to elect a president that meets our expectations. And don't look at that as, oh, God's let us down. Or is there involvement because of the sin of our country? Have Christians let us? Yeah, we can go through all of that. Yes, God is going to order the steps, not for what's going to make us comfortable, but to accomplish his purposes. God orders our steps so that we will be in the place to be used by him to accomplish what he wants for us, for the good of the kingdom, for the good of eternity. And Jesus, in this process, Jesus doesn't just provide provisions. He wants us to look at him that he is our provision. Jesus is our provision. It's not that Jesus is a spiritual ATM, though he does dole out blessing to us. He does meet our needs, but he himself is our needs, the provision for our need. We need, like the disciples, to understand that. Jesus put them from one impossible situation to another. He gave them anticipation and then fulfilled it in a way that was different than what they expected. When Jesus was probably walking by on the lake, he was putting them in a position where they needed to go, Jesus, we need your help. We don't know what to do. Jesus, bear our burdens. Jesus, we're clueless. My prayer life, I'm challenged. My prayer needs to be more, instead of Jesus, please redeem me from this, and I'll use the spiritual language, Jesus, redeem me from, this is my prayer when I was in Arizona, redeem me from this position, God, of not knowing where I'm going to go, and I'm working at Walmart, and I'm part-time at these two churches, and God, redeem this in my life. And sure, we need to pray that way. I'm not demeaning that. But my prayer should have been, God, put me where you want to use me, and may I submit to that. And God, I don't know how I'm going to do it right now. Would you show me how to do it? God, would you give me the strength to do what I can't do on my own? God, will you give me the wisdom to do what is beyond me? We've got to be at the point where we recognize and submit to God. Number one, yes, he empowers us that we can do what he's called us to do. But to get there, we've got to recognize whatever it is he's called us to do, it is impossible on our own to bring glory to him. Do you know it's impossible on my own to glorify God in my marriage? It's impossible on my own to glorify God as the pastor in this church. It is impossible on my own to represent Christ well down at Walmart in the sporting goods. That's above my pay grade. And Jesus puts me in those positions, so I will go, Jesus, you're my provision. Jesus, I can read your word. I can seek you out. And I can trust you by putting one foot in front of the other and doing the best I can with what you've put in front of me. Jesus will always provide and will always utilize when we give him all we have. He doesn't expect more than you've got. See, he provides beyond that. He didn't expect the disciples to put forth anything other than a couple of loaves and a couple of fish, because that's all he allowed them to have so that they could see his glory magnified. Todd, why don't you come on up, and Jerry, come on up, and let's worship a little bit more as we process this. Jesus, the Old Testament and Exodus, you took your promise, your cherished people, you took them to the promised land via a wilderness because you wanted them to learn to walk with you, to be fully trusting you, fully engaged with you, to fully get their purpose. God, you want the same thing from us. You want us to walk with you, not just dash back and forth when we need something, but daily to submit ourselves to your purposes, to daily come before you and acknowledge, God, this is bringing glory to your name. When I go to the store, is impossible for me. I need you. God, I pray that we would recognize, we would worship you, we'd grab onto you, that Jesus, you are our provision. You're our provision for our sin. And you are our provision for living a life that glorifies you in this life, no matter where you've called us. God, we ask this in your name and give you the glory. Amen.
The splendor of the King, clothed in majesty, let all the earth rejoice, let all the earth rejoice. He wraps himself in light, and darkness tries to hide, and trembles at his voice, and trembles at his voice. How great is our God. Sing with me, how great is our God. And I will sing, how great is our God. And age to age he stands, and time is in his hands, beginning and the end, beginning and the end. The Godhead three in one, Father, Spirit, Son, the Lion and the Lamb, the Lion and the Lamb. How great is our God. Sing with me, how great is our God. And I will sing, how great, how great. Above all names, worthy of all praise, my heart will sing how great is our God. You are the name above all names, worthy of. God will see how great is our God. How great is our God. Sing with me, how great is our God. And I will see how great is our God.